Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of naturenow@kptz.org.
Hello, this is Mary Robson with Alex Henley, and we are here in the first week of July. I know that your calendar still says April because we're not paying a whole lot of attention to time, but it is the first week of July, and today we are going to celebrate the first year anniversary of the Chichmahan Trail in Port Townsend. And first, we will have some observations. These are things I noticed while not having even left home. I live near Cape George Road, and the first thing that I saw that surprised me was a banana slug. It was moving across a stone patio, 5 inches long, yellow with brown spots. Some of them are solid yellow, and I have seldom seen these outside of deep woods, but there it was.
The Dungeness Audubon Center recently published an introduction to native slugs with intriguing studies of slime. They wrote, "Their magic mucus consists of mucin proteins that form chains. Sugar molecules decorate the sides in repeating patterns, helping link the mucus together. The additional 96% of the substance is water." Definitely doesn't feel like water. The slug does not waste any of its own water, though. It has a novel adaptation where it dispenses dry granules of mucus, which then absorbs surrounding water from the environment. The granules can absorb several hundred times its weight in water. The slime helps with movement and protection, and it has toxins that can repel predators. Banana slug is ideally fitted for recycling plants.
Now in bloom, ocean spray. This is one of the most beautiful parts of the early July flora. It has white flowers dangling from the branches, and you'll see it along roadside edges. It grows in dry to moist areas, either open forests or coastal bluffs, but it is quite common where the area has been disturbed, such as logged or burned areas and roadsides. And the ocean spray may be among the earliest plants to return after wildfire. It is most visible now while flowering. The white absolutely lives up to its name, ocean spray. It sort of recedes into the landscape after the flowers turn brown, but when blooming, it attracts native bees. The branches and flowers look fragile, but the wood had many important uses for indigenous people. It is hard and durable, sometimes called ironwood. The wood of ocean spray made tools and utensils, and they made it even harder by heating it over a fire and polishing it with horsetail stems. Apparently, it does not easily catch fire. It was used for roasting tongs, digging sticks, fishing hooks, needles, bows and spears, harpoons, and arrow shafts. It's a very versatile material. And finally, for observations, a bobcat. As I drove into the gravel driveway last week, the bobcat stood in front of the car about 10 feet away. I was looking directly at its bobtail, a short tail tipped in black. As soon as I got there, this adult leapt into the woods. I think this may be the same bobcat I saw 3 months ago. They have a range of about 2 to 6 miles. Another astonishing animal. And we do have a mystery sound. Our interview today features Celeste Dybeck, who is an elder of the Jamestown Sklallam tribe and one of the people who helped a great deal with getting the Chichmahan Trail established, from the idea to getting all the permits to getting it built, and now to help it be more and more part of the connection between tribal history and current history in Port Townsend. It's a terrific trail, and we're going to just jump right on it. Welcome, Celeste. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you, Mary. Today is the one-year anniversary of the grand opening of the Chichmahan Trail. And the Chichmahan Trail was a partnership between the Jamestown Sklallam Tribe and the Native Connection Action Group here in Port Townsend. And that action group is a social justice committee within Quimper Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. There are
right.
three routes for the trail. walking, biking, and driving.
I had the pleasure of walking parts of the trail on Monday morning this week and found a map at the kiosk near the totem pole and was able to unwrap it and start in on the trail, and it's wonderful to do. There are 18 different stops, am I correct?
Yes.
They all touch on an aspect of the history of the tribe in this area. How did you decide where to put these 18?
Well, first of all, I went to talk to Ron Allen, our tribal chairman, to ask permission to do this project here in Port Townsend. It happened to be the same, when I was waiting for my appointment, two gentlemen left. I walked in, shared what we wanted to do with the Cheats Mahan Trail and bring more Native history to Port Townsend. And he looked at me and said, "Oh, you want an Indian up Port Townsend?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Then you need to pony up with those two guys who just left my office." And those two guys who just left his office were Jake Beatty and Steve Oliver from the Maritime Center.
Uh-huh.
They were also there asking for Native history on the first boats in the area. And out of that wish came the donation of the totem pole, and yes, we can do the Cheats Mahan Trail. So our first step, Ron put us in touch with Betty Oppenheimer, the tribal communications specialist, and David Brownell, the tribe's historical preservation officer. And David and Betty came up with, I think, 14 or 15 signs. And then we took that list and we consulted with tribal council and tribal elders, who also offered their ideas. And our own Liz Burden from Port Townsend, I call her our trailblazer. It was her idea to add the four-point sign up by the high school. So out of that, we had to prove authenticity of all the signs and all the verbiage, which Betty and David did. And the tribe offered to pay for all the permits. David and Betty's time, they also offered Bud Turner from the carving shed to design the signs. So what we had to do was pay for the signs. And out of that came fundraising.
Well, one of the things that's really striking about the trail is that the signs are so beautiful. They are individually wonderful, and take them as a group, it's astonishing how much they're able to communicate. One of the things that you told me was that Dr. Engel, who recently retired, said the trail history should be taught in every kindergarten class. I think that is just amazing.
That was so wonderful. We had a fundraiser where about, I think we had a little over 100 people attend, and Dr. Engel got up and spoke and did a pitch for us, and he also said, this needs to be on every kindergarten curriculum. When I was, yo-ho, Dr. Engel, he was one of our big cheerleaders.
Well, that is wonderful, because the education aspect of the trail is one of the things that all of you had in mind at the most when you designed it. You were going to also ask about the signage at Point Hudson talking about Chief Chichiman's big heart, and you said the next sign tells how the Native people camped on the beach en route to pick hops or berries. And then at that time, there was also a city ordinance that would not allow Indians in town, which just seems like another reason to get the trail going and sort things out a bit. You wanted to talk a bit about Cheech Mahan and his contribution to peace in Port Townsend. How did that work?
Well, in the beginning, when the white settlers came, this is where the plow-owned Indians were living at the time, and it was called Katai. And Katai, as you know, the Indians kind of moved around seasonally, you know, where the fishing was good or berry picking was good. But this was their biggest settlement, and this was known as the capital of the Clallams. Kai was the capital.
There were treaties signed which were not honored by the white settlers.
Right. And when the white settlers came, Pettigrove and Hastings took Cheats Mahan to San Francisco on a big ship. And when Cheats Mahan went to San Francisco, he could clearly see that the white man's way was going to be moving up the coast and that he needed to honor that and get on board. And he was given white man's clothes, which he absolutely loved and never took off. James Swan also took him around San Francisco, and he and James Swan became really good friends. And when Cheats Mahan came back to Port Townsend and the white settlers wanted this land for their use, Isaac Stevens, who was eyeing to be the governor of Data, Washington, was the territory then, but they had the Point No Point Treaty signed in 1855. And under that treaty, of course, gave the white settlers the property, the land, but the tribal folks still had the freedom to come and go. They had their right to fishing and hunting rights, and they had the right to health and education. And within a couple of years, the tribal folks could see that the white man was not living up to their end of the treaty, and they wanted to go at war. And Cheats Mahan said, whoa, we need to work this out. Let me negotiate between the white settlers and the Indians. He said, I will stay at Sentinel Rock, which is the rock at the golf course where his statue is. I will remain there under my blanket. I will talk to both parties every day. The white settlers were on a hill up by the high school. The Indians were out at North Beach. And Cheats Mahan said, when I bring peace, I will stand up, I will give a big whoop, and I will throw my blanket off. So the statue is Cheats Mahan with his arm up in the air throwing his blanket off. He did bring peace. So out of that, the white settlers really came to adore Cheats Mahan. And out of that, the first city park in Port Townsend, the women from the civic club chose to name it after Cheats Mahan. So that's why it's called Chetsimoka Park.
And which was their term. That was their term for his name, right?
Yeah, they claimed they couldn't pronounce Cheats Mahan, so they changed the pronunciation to Chetsimoka.
Well, that is certainly a lame claim.
Well, who knows?
Do have a park with the name. I think at this point it would be really good to start talking a little bit about the totem pole, because the city was honored by having that beautiful pole donated by the Sklallam, and I am interested in how it got carved and a little bit more about the carving shed, because this is an ongoing art reality with the tribe. So what's the story on how that was really brought to be?
Well, that came to be in that conversation with Jake Beatty and Steve Oliver. Ron Allen decided to donate a totem pole. The totem pole was designed by Dale Falstick, who is our master carver, but he was in retirement at the time. So Dale came out of retirement to design this totem pole.
Wow.
For the Maritime Center and Port Townsend. Uh-huh. And they put it on fast track. Dale's son came and stayed with him from Tasmania for 2 or 3 months to, you know, get this carving underway. They had 3 full-time carvers and 3 part-time carvers. And I believe they had it carved in about 6 months. But then the painting is a whole nother process. But the totem, I think, is absolutely beautiful. There's 3 figures. At the top, there's a carver, and he's holding 2 tools. And I saw the totem when it was flat, and the tools are wrapped in a copper rope, and it's just beautiful. Under the carver, the middle figure is the spirit of the cedar tree, and cedar is used so much by tribal folks for the canoes, the boats, their houses, their clothes, bowls, tools, just about anything you could name, diapers. Yeah,
so
don't forget baskets and skirts and hats and visors. Now, the bottom figure is Cheats Mahan in the welcoming position. The welcoming position, he would truly have his hands extended out from his body. But Dale and the guys in the carving shed decided to put them up. They thought if his hands were extended at a 90 degree, that possibly children would be climbing up on his arms, breaking them. So they chose to put them upward. And he is standing on Sentinel Rock, the totem.
Ah, okay. It brings that aspect of his history into this beautifully prominent totem pole. What I love about it is that anybody who lives here or anyone who comes as a visitor, when you see that totem pole, you absolutely know that there's a strong Native connection in this town. It just rises up and tells us that. So there is a carving shed, and you had said that people can visit if they wish to?
Oh, absolutely. The carving shed for Jamestown is open to the public. They just recently moved to a bigger facility, so it's at 5673 Woodcock Road, and that's north of Squim. Go north on Squim Avenue, turn right on Woodcock, and it's down about a quarter of a mile on the left. There's a white fence in front. Really recommended that you call ahead of time and make sure they're going to be there.
Can we drop your name if someone is going?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They laugh because I send so many people up there. Great place to visit. Right now, all of the totems from the Dance Plaza, which is the main spot at the Blinn campus, they're being rehabilitated and repainted. So it is jam-packed with all those totems right now.
Well, I hadn't even thought about the need to keep up the maintenance on poles that are already standing, but that's apparently something that's really important.
If you choose to do that, I know the Haidas do not do that. They let their totems go back to Mother Nature, and I think it's heartbreaking to just let them disintegrate and go back to Mother Nature. I think they should be preserved, but that's my own opinion.
Well, and for some of us, the first time we see a picture of a Haida pole, it will be in quite a decrepit state. I mean, that's
exactly
the first impression you have. But when you look at the one in Fort Townsend, it is a brilliant, I guess that's the word that comes to mind in every way, brilliant in idea and brilliant in how it shines in the sun or the rain. If you're interested, folks, look up the carving shed. And I wanted to ask you about people who have shared the trail or people, stories or anything you know about the last year and how the trail has helped or affected people.
Well, I had one friend say to me, I had no idea it was going to be this big of a deal. I mean, even my own brother said that. And she had her granddaughters visiting from out of town, a 7 and 9 year old, and she took them on a bike ride to see the trail. And the girls were just blown away. And they said, Grandma, we want to do this again. And I know there's another couple from church who have chosen about a year ago that they would walk 2 signs every Sunday after church. So it took them 9 weeks to do the signs, but they did it and they learned a lot. That's one thing that's been real heartwarming is to hear that people are so anxious to learn the history. We've had a lot of, oh, I didn't know that. Oh, really? I didn't know that either. Our folks in Port Townsend just seem eager to learn the history. And that's been very receptive and something that we've all cherished.
Well, one of the things about this trail is that it looks so swell. And it's partly because you have volunteers who are trail ambassadors. How does that work? They just decide they're going to sponsor a sign and keep it clean?
Yes, we have people who sponsored and paid for a sign. But in addition to that, we have volunteers lined up who are called trail ambassadors. And their volunteer job is to check their sign once or twice a month or whenever they feel the need and check it for cleanliness. Is there debris on it? Has somebody mowed the lawn nearby and it's full of grass? Has a bird pooped on it? So we supplied them with a cleaning kit and our email address so they can let us know how things are going or if a car ran over it, if it needs to be replaced. So that's been very fun, too.
Yeah, and the signs are so important that it's wonderful that they have a way to keep as polished as they were when they were first put in.
If you can't get out to see the signs but you want to learn about the trail, we have booklets for sale. They say everything that's on the sign and they say more tribal history, etc. They have a map of the Point No Point Treaty area and other maps as well.
This booklet would make a great gift for an out-of-town visitor. And since I frequently have out-of-town visitors, at least I used to, I am planning to make sure they get the booklet and that they get a walk. This is a great place when we're so confined. You can get out on that trail and
You can
really enjoy yourself
on your bicycle.
I am just delighted that you could be here and bring to us some of the detail we might not have known about the Cheech Mahon Trail, which is opened 1 year ago this week. And it represents a real tribute to the Jamestown Sklallam people and the other two sections of the Sklallams and to their commitment to be known in Port Townsend. It's wonderful. So thank you so much, Celeste. I really enjoyed this.
Well, thank you, Mary. And it was fun chatting with you.
The mystery sound is the great blue heron, a bird you probably find easy to identify.
Watching this bird fly is unforgettable. The length of the neck and the wing width, over 6 feet, they are also notable when they stand watching for fish, being a statue of patience. They are common and not considered threatened, but because great blue herons depend on wetlands for feeding and on relatively undisturbed sites for breeding, they are vulnerable to habitat loss and to impacts such as traffic, logging, and motorboats.
Thanks for joining us for Nature Now in the first week of July, with appreciation to Alex Henley for helping to read and for navigating the phones. This local and eclectic show runs Wednesday at noon, and this week it will be on Saturday at 12:30. Ordinarily, it is also on Thursday at 5. The podcasts will appear on KPTZ after the show has been on the radio, and the podcast's a great way to catch up with what's going on Nature Now. Thanks.
This is the Blackfish Paddle Song, a song that belongs to the three Sklallam Klallam tribes. Our radio station was given permission by Jamestown to play this song.
The Blackfish Paddle Song.
Oh, Nishtar.